For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Well, good morning, Bodhisattvas. Spring, springing dragons in the cloud and on the ground. Time passes quickly. Already we're 3/4 of the way through our householder our householder spring practice commitment period, where some of us are committed to intensive community practice, and everyone else is along for the ride. So you're all riding the dragon. So this is the beginning of the 6th of 8 weeks. Only 2 weeks left. Then we'll have sesshin. After 2 months of this householder practice, we'll have the crescendo in sitting in stillness of silent illumination for 3 days. And next Sunday, our Shuso will offer her final talk of the practice period. Gone fast?
It has gone fast.
Time flies when you're having fun. Before we enter into the teachings of our great Zen ancestor, Darlene Cohn, are there any kind of questions or offerings or experiences you'd like to share about this practice commitment period, or Dzogchen Bap or Blanche at this moment? Or any questions about how the practice commitment period is functioning? For those in the practice commitment period, there's a shared outline, which sometimes is revised or added to. So PCP folks, keep an eye on that. If anyone does have questions, you know where to find me. You know where to find us yourself. In case you're afraid to ask me, ask it yourself. Or if you're afraid to ask, it's yourself, ask me. I just want to welcome a new person. Did you say Sunny?
Sunny.
Okay.
Yes,
Shingru. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Somehow, I didn't recognize you. Welcome back. And I don't think anyone online is new to this situation.
Did you see the comment online that it sounds a little distant?
Oh, okay. It sounds a little distant?
Yeah.
I don't know what to do about that, but is it sounding better now? Are you looking online to let me?
Yeah, online folks, is the audio okay or sounding a little distant? Okay, I have one thumbs up.
Okay. I'll try to talk a little louder.
Okay.
You can hear this bird song. And I wondered if people on the ground zendo here, if you've seen or smelled the viburnum and lilac as you walked in. Few of you have. If somehow you didn't, all this flowering is happening in the backyard around the temple entrance, so please feel free to enjoy it. And yesterday morning, a group of dragons had a bird viewing party. There's moon viewing parties, but we had a bird viewing party, and a bunch of us took a walk through West Ridge Nature Park up the street, led by Lou, who's here, but who might not be able to attend today. But I just want to say it was a real gift from Lou to guide our walk. They gently pointed out and named many birds on a chilly grayish morning in the middle of the city. And I'll just mention a few of what I remember being seen. One thing I had never noted before was a golden-crowned kinglet. It was a kingfisher, red-winged blackbirds, a goldfinch, wood ducks, mallard ducks, Canada geese, robins, a song sparrow, which is adorable and sounded just like a song sparrow, a couple of hawks, grackles, a kestrel, and there were also other things. There were humans volunteering to take care of this park, putting down mulch and just caring for this park. There were Virginia bluebells, and I think I saw some cherry blossoms and redbud, and even a turtle and a rabbit. I heard someone in the group say there was a fresh-killed bird, but I didn't see it. And I bet there were probably some city rats around that were hiding out. I heard someone ask, what kind of hawk was that as the hawk flew over? And it kind of flew away quickly. And Lou commented, we'll never know. I thought, no, this is a Zen walk, right? We'll never know. So Lou shows up, Zen Master Lou. So, you know, this is the wonder of Sangha, being able to stroll around, just being with, we'll never know. So hopefully those walks will continue in the future in some way. But I thought today we can move on to opening up this teaching of Darlene Cullen. Darlene, who encourages a practice of no preference, which is swallowing everything up in one gulp, accepting it all, taking it all in. In some ways, savoring everything without preference. She offers a Zen practice in her writings and her teachings. So there's one book that we've been working with called Turning Suffering Inside Out, a Zen approach to living with physical and emotional pain. Sounds like a self-help book, but it's pretty good. It's turning suffering inside out. Darlene has like an amazing kind of candor and vitality, I think, that comes through in her writing and also in her spoken word, her teachings. And I think this encouragement to allow room for everything in our experience, using everything, especially our own emotional and physical pain, but I would say in parentheses, even our delight or our boredom, our own missteps and apparent flaws, to wake up. Now, personally, kind of miraculously, I met Darlene before she passed away a few times in my Zen travels, randomly attending two teaching weekends with her in the 90s, and then kind of seeing her and listening to her when she was kind of hanging around. She wasn't living there, but she was hanging around San Francisco Zen Summit. And I will bet that Tygen has had quite a bit of knowledge of Darlene. Is Tyka nodding?
Yeah, thumbs up.
Thumbs up. I'll just share some of my impressions. That she really stood out somehow, kind of a small person, but she was very engaging and self-revealing, you know, especially around Zen Center when everybody's like quiet and stern, and kind of uptight. Darlene was just bright and luminous. And when I met her, it was very obvious that she suffered from some kind of illness. She moved with a lot of difficulty often. And indeed, as a young mother and a devoted Zen student, I guess she began like in the very early 70s when Suzuki Roshi was still alive at San Francisco Zen Center. And then she was an assistant to the subsequent abbot, Richard Baker. So she had, you know, kind of a big job, you know, being with this teacher, taking care of things for them. But then, living at this monastery at Green Gulch Farm, things were going along. Out of the blue, she woke up one morning as a young mother with rheumatoid arthritis and couldn't move her body. And from then on, it appears, she practiced Zazen with what was right in her body, this pain and illness, and also her own self and her own reactivity. So there's a real rawness and honesty to Darlene's teachings. She also liked to wear lacy clothes, had a purple okesa, and she had a sensual, playful quality, even as she aged and became a little more mangled by this illness, gnarled. I found it amazing that she was a body worker. So even though I remember her saying something like, some days it took her two hours to get out of bed, to move her body and get it going. But then also did body work and healing work with people in chronic pain. So she used her wisdom derived from her own experience to help others in that way. She was definitely an original and defied this kind of stereotype of her generation in particular. Of these kind of uptight, pulled-in people. She also, I think, is in this tradition of kind of eccentric enlightening monks who wander around, you know, writing poetry, singing, dancing, wanton a little bit. I remember her singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat during a Dharma talk. And I remember being in her presence thinking, wow, this was not the Zen teacher I was expecting. A lesson in and of itself. So her Dharma name is Surei Kenpo, which means great spirit manifesting Dharma. And she died in January of 2011, which is, I believe, is before Joko Beck and before Blanche, although she was much younger, born in 1942. Mm-hmm. She received Dharma transmission from a teacher named Michael Wenger, who is still living and has Parkinson's. Also another great dragon. And one of her Dharma heirs, Lisa Hoffman, will visit us in June, so we're lucky. But the great Buddha, Darlene, was a great suffering expert, a dukkha virtuoso. maybe by choice, maybe by circumstance, but she knew suffering inside and out. So I think many of us have heard about the Four Noble Truths or the Noble Truth teachings in Buddhism, that the Buddha teaches suffering and the end of suffering. That there is this suffering in the world or stress, and there's a cause and there's a way out, and this way out is kind of, you know, being really wise and present and compassionate with everything 24/7, you could say. These are nice words, but this practice is not very easy. And Darlene's life, at least by some measures, did not appear to be very easy. And our lives are not actually very easy. I think we're on the wrong, we're in the wrong, on the wrong planet, in the wrong country or something, for an easy life. So Darlene really, I think, speaks to this world. And in her writings and her teachings, like some others, she distinguishes between what she calls mundane, a kind of unavoidable suffering. I think it's amazing that someone who had so much physical challenge and pain called it mundane. That's my mundane pain. But then she says there's extra avoidable suffering, extra anguish caused by our favorites, craving, hatred, confusion. And if craving, hatred, and confusion seem a little abstract, there are some other ways to think about it that might bring it home. And that is this Buddhist teaching, which I think really is kind of enfolded in Darlene's work or teaching, is extra stress that results from being blown about by what are known as the eight worldly winds. It's a very old teaching, but it's this, you know, the winds are gain and loss, fame and, let's say, disgrace, praise and blame, pleasure and pain, emotional, physical pain. So like praise and blame. Ah, I feel good when I'm getting praised. And, you know, I feel bad when other people are blaming me for stuff. You know, want more pleasure? I want to push away anything uncomfortable. So these worldly winds, trying to grab more or less, let me grab some lessness, wanting to be adored, you know, and seeing our flaws and limitations as humiliating, you know, this desire to be seen in a certain way. Am I hot or not? Remember that? There used to be that. Hot or not, hot or not. It was a great writing in the New Yorker by Andy Borowitz, a long time ago, Borowitz, called Am I Hot or Not? Which really, I think Darlene would have been as been giggling over. Or craving pain and or craving pleasure and avoiding pain. Or you could be craving pain, still another form of craving, and pushing away pleasure. Well, that works too. But at any cost, we see this, right, in our culture. Right now, any cost. Let's pretend that we can just get rid of things that are inconvenient, like somebody born in another country, put them on a plane, any cost. So, being ruled by this self-centered ego and this emotional whiplash is really exhausting. So this is extra suffering, let's say. And it's so limiting. In the, I think, first chapter, maybe, of Darlene's book, Turning Suffering Inside Out, she kind of meticulously recounts a morning from the minute she wakes up and shows how these worldly winds operate. You know, things like, well, she wakes up pretty good. She enjoys a delicious peach, but then is frustrated that somebody ate all the yogurt in the refrigerator. How could they do that? You know? Knowing that, of course, I need this protein that somebody took away from me. And then, you know, somebody calls her and says, you're an amazing Zen teacher. You're awesome. And she's like, you know, elated. The next moment, she gets an email, a seminar is canceled because her topic isn't so interesting, and then she's angry and feels devalued, right? You know, I think we all can relate to this. And she doesn't say be a zombie. She just says really penetrate that process, really know it intimately. She relates these great stories. One is a really sad, actually, of an elderly woman who, with her husband, spent a lifetime deferring enjoyment, working super hard, saving all their money for their dream vacation, this perfect moment of happiness, a cruise in the Caribbean. This big event. Only they get on the cruise, and they're not happy because the whole cruise, they're like going, well, I wonder what's for dinner, or what's the next event, or what's the next port? Maybe that's going to even be better than this one. And forgot to enjoy what was right in front of them. You know, I read recently that people's anticipation of a vacation is rated more enjoyable than the actual vacation. The same can be said for sashimi. Thought the sashimi was going to be different, you know. Or maybe the next period of zazen will be even better. But it, you can see that if there is a gaining idea, this craving or waiting for the big event, you're sunk. You might not even know you're sunk, which is even worse. So Darlene is always saying, watch what happens. You have a choice, you know. But first you have to know it. She writes, nothing I had learned in my years of Zen sitting practice and innumerable retreats. So after you've had innumerable retreats, maybe you'll get a taste of some of this practice of Darlene's. But she says, even after all this, none of this prepared me for the ordeal of developing rheumatoid arthritis in my seventh year of practice. Overwhelmed by the power of pain, I could do little else but surrender to the pure physicality of my existence. I wouldn't have chosen to explore consciousness on such a visceral level. But once I was forced to, I discovered that there were some other experiences waiting to be noticed. If at any given moment I was aware of 10 different aspects of the present moment, like the hum of the air conditioner, the thought of the laundry I had to do, my glasses sliding down my nose, the throbbing pain in my hips, that's too much pain. It's one object of awareness out of 10. But if at that moment I could be aware of 100 aspects of the present moment, not only 10 things, maybe the 10,000 things that I noticed before, but also even more subtle aspects, like the shadow of the lamp against the wall, the brush of my hair against my ear, pull of my clothes against the skin, then my pain was just one among 100 objects of consciousness. And it became and Hema could live with. So she notes that waiting for the big event, when all mundane suffering disappears, evaporates, that just creates extra suffering. It narrows our attention to something very, very, very small. And Jake, I see you nodding, and I think in medicine they notice that even when the source of pain goes on, our biology wants to still feel it, kind of compulsively. So we narrow, then we get to the narrow and just focus on that thing, and we have to teach ourselves how to let go, you know, and actually be in the moment. But caught in gaining ideas, in the ego dream of if only I had a perfect job, a perfect partner, a perfect body, perfect health, the perfect product on Amazon delivered at the perfect time. If only. Then no more pain. We all know the mundane pain is unavoidable. But the extra comes from this if-onlyness, this waiting for the big event. I might have mentioned this before in here, but I remember reading about one of these Instagram influencers, you know, van life that used to be popular, like, you know, great idea, right? Cruising around in a van into beautiful locations, the right clothes, right hair, right makeup, you know, like this image. And this person said she'd like drive her van someplace and then her crew would come and get her all gussied up for this photo shoot, you know, or video shoot in these exotic locations. And she would be exhausted. Like, you know, she didn't enjoy it. She was dreading going to the next beautiful place, you know. But, of course, like, we're all hooked into it going, doesn't that look great? Mm. No, I want to do that. I want to be Hawaii in my VW van and, you know, dress in a bikini or something like that and look beautiful, you know, and then, you know, make money that way. You know, people are buying all the products I'm advertising. So, you know, of course, you know where that leads, right? The right vacation. Right, winning the lottery, eternal happiness. Only praise, gain, fame, and pleasure, not the other side. No more mundane suffering. Of course, this isn't the case. And Darlene passed away before Instagram and Snapchat and all this stuff really, you know, mm-hmm. What is that thing now?
Because TikTok.
TikTok, yeah. I haven't even seen a TikTok, believe it or not. But, I just don't have time. But she would, I'm sure, have a field day with this. But she does point ways to unhook from this spin cycle, let's say, of extra suffering. And she writes, how do we develop the appreciation of things just as they are, especially if we're sick and in pain? Because she takes sickness and pain very seriously. Does not dismiss it. We must treat our pain, and I put in parentheses, our mundane suffering, gently, respectfully, not resisting it, but living with it. And when we do resist it, we need to treat that with respect. My Zen meditation training turned out to be a great help to me. I focused my attention on my immediate experience, on my body sensations, my sense impressions, the stream of my consciousness. As in Zen practice, there is no goal involved. There is only the relentless, implacable present. And it is only in the present that we can cultivate the mental stability that's required to practice non-preference for the conditions of our lives. So Darlene promoted skillful means such as Zazen and close attention to everything, and other practical means too, which I'll, you know, kind of more maybe accessible when you're not on your cushion. But she encouraged this cultivation of ways to be with the flow of the emotional ups and downs without trying to quash them. Her message ultimately is, I think, everything is Buddha Dharma. See everything as Buddha Dharma. And there is no extra suffering if you're not caught by habits and strategies to get rid of it. If you have no, as they say, picking and choosing. But I often don't want to hear this, you know. I want to pick and choose. Like, I want to pick and choose how and when I die. What a painful death. She says, we need to cultivate skills that enable us to be present for all of our life, not just the moments we prefer. I think in our bird walk, maybe it was Lou who said this too, who said that Joko Beck talked about when she listens, when she's in Zazen, she'll often listen to sounds. And she says, I listen to everything. I listen to traffic. And then I think it was Lou who said they started listening to traffic. And I was like, oh. Darlene says, we tend to overlook everyday epiphanies, waiting for some big event. We cultivate attention. What cultivating attention to detail introduces is spaciousness, space around thoughts and activities that allow us to live a rich and satisfying life right in the middle of misery. And in Darlene's way, in her honesty too, especially when you read her writings, there is this caution, kind of know your limits too. Don't pretend that you're this, like, you know, glowing bodhisattva who's always having a good day. Or at least acting like it. Don't cover up and power through. She notes, like, she describes when she can't get out of bed some mornings, that because she's exhausted and in pain, she enjoys the warmth of the comforter and goes underneath it and eats cookies and ice cream in bed, you know? And she notices, like, oh, she worries, you know, that she can't measure up. You know, she's not this great Zen master who just pops up and goes to the Zendo every day. You know, worries that she doesn't measure up to this idea for her students. And she doesn't use this word confession, but I think this admission of our limitations, of where we are just who we are, is a kind of confession or admission that lead to, let's say, liberation or detoxify extra suffering. You know, like, we don't have to be like that van life person pretending to be happy and, you know, enjoying a situation when they're exhausted. I try to keep that image up. Her ability to appreciate the moment, to be one with the moment, that includes fatigue and pain, is really, I find, quite an inspiration. And still, we can't say, oh, I'm going to be like Darlene. You know, you have to be like yourself. That's what she's saying. Be yourself. And for her, instead of turning away from her gnarled, painful body, she stays with the body and all of the emotions that are part of mundane suffering. But she has this clarity and dignity and compassion. And this is really how to sit Sashin Bodhisattvas. And it's a lot easier. And this is this openness, is the heart, mind, body of Tibet. So I'd say that Darlene's Dharma is a modern commentary on a certain aspect of Zazen, not just suffering, but also this practice of not preferring any state of mind and not being fooled that any particular state of mind is better than the other. You know, like, I want to cultivate equanimity, which is great and wholesome. But if you fail to do that, don't be too bummed out. Or if your equanimity is a fake out, I'm just like sitting in these robes, acting equanimous. But inside, I'm a roiling kettle of rage. You know, something like that. Darlene says, if we take such an attitude of non-preference, no pain, mundane suffering, let's say, can commandeer our lives. If we take such an attitude of non-preference, no pain can commandeer our lives. We can just begin to live with our suffering in such a way that frustration and disappointments are a part of the rich tapestry of living. So, like Joko and Blanche, Darlene also offers this dharma of the present moment as our teacher and as compassion's way, real compassion for ourselves, for our pain, for the world, for delight. And I want to say that I really want to apologize because I don't feel I can really do Darlene justice. I really mean that. But that's my attempt. And her student, Lisa Hoffman, will do a half-day retreat in June here. And I know she'll do a better job. And yesterday, you know, we saw Canada geese on the bird walk. So I'm going to read this poem to end today called Wild Geese. This seems fitting. I know many of you, I hear the from Eve, have heard this poem. I think it, Darlene's words and her life and her practice may add to the enjoyment of this poem, which goes, you do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. Only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, calls to you like Darlene, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. So, by not needing to be good, we're always whole. So thank you all very much. Thank you to Darlene and Bodhisattvas. Any comments? Reactions? Some of you actually read some of this, so. David Ray? And maybe Eve, I don't know if you wanted to offer something, or just were happy and gosh, but David?
Well, I want to.
Or maybe you need a mic.
Oh, fine.
We're doing this mic passing around. And
studio.
Well, thank you very much for introducing us, introducing me to Darlene Cohen, and thank you for putting that Dharma talk about sexuality. I just want to flag it because I kind of couldn't believe my ears when she started to say, "I respect Thich Nhat Hanh, but," and I thought, "Wait," because when you know when I was studying to for taking the precepts, I had a meeting with Thaigen where I said, "Okay, you just have to know I'm not okay with the part of Thich Nhat Hanh's precepts that says the only acceptable form of sexual expression is in a loving, committed, and therefore exclusively monogamous relationship." And Darlene just says, "That is not my sexual calling." And, you know, compulsory monogamy is another form. You know, it's great. It's great just as heterosexuality is great for them that wants it. But compelling it is just another form of oppression. And, you know, Buddha was born into a world, right, where Hindu mythology has, you know, Draupadi with five husbands who are brothers. And anyway, you know, and I may be wrong, but I don't think he ever said, you know, it's one partner per customer. I don't think he ever said that. But anyway, she's so just honest and forthright. You know, and so the honesty that she brings to talk about suffering, she brings to so many other things in life, anger, you know. So I'm really grateful. I'm feeling like personally I'm at a place in my life where, wow, my motivation for practice, my motivation for being here has shifted. So it's like there's a new set of reasons. And Darlene just feels like, I don't know why I'm calling her Darlene as if I knew her. Darlene Cohen, this great teacher, just really feels like the right new voice at the right time in my life. So thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Mm. So David was referring to this. If you Google like sexuality, Darlene Cohen, you'll be able to link to this this talk. I think that she gave the Gay Buddhist Fellowship, and I think it ends with something like you know, and remember, don't let passion overrule compassion. So she's very able to talk about passion. And then also about how her own struggle with her own sexuality was her first teacher, she says, her greatest teacher. So, won't be able to. Oh, and Leo G put it in the chat maybe for us. So, thank you. Thank you, David.
And then yeah. Leo, oh, I'm sorry.
Leo, just go right ahead.
Leo and Thaigen have their hands raised. Do you want me?
Yeah. I think Leo, I just. Hi, Leo.
Hi, thank you so much for the talk. I really am starting to enjoy Darlene Cohen. I listened to the YouTube yesterday, her Dharma talk, and I was really impressed with her openness. She owned her own experiences, and she did it in a way that I didn't feel judged, like going around and be like, "You shouldn't be doing X, Y, and Z." She kind of like placed her experience to the forefront and made it very relatable to me. I also appreciate what you mentioned earlier about the next thing would always be good. When I was started at the Baird Woods yesterday, which was really wonderful, a really wonderful way to start the weekend, etc., I immediately I felt, oh, botanical gardens, and we should do this, and the next thing will be even better. And I was like, no, like Leo Chill, I became aware of this propensity to the next outing will be this and that versus focus on what is happening in the present moment. And the same with Sashin. I'm sitting in the first zazen, it's not good, the next one will be better. I'm sitting in the next one, it's not as good, the next one will be better. And it's the end of the day. I'm like, there's no other one. Like, I may have to kind of like face it as is. So as you mentioned it with Darlene, these teachings really resonated with me, especially like the YouTube video, like you set the stage for that. But anyway, that's all I wanted to say, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Leo. Yeah, and you know, that sexuality talk was at the, I think, a Queer Buddhist Fellowship, right? So here she is in San Francisco, you know, the kind of nexus or center point of kind of exuberant free-for-all sexuality. And she's like right there with the queer homies, you know, talking about her struggle and affirming the importance of sexuality in our lives, not hiding from it. Tygen, I see a gold hand. Can't wait.
Yes, thank you. Just I wanted to say about Darlene, I knew her fairly well. She did body work on me. But she was around, and I guess I knew her before she had, or as she was in the early stages of her rheumatoid arthritis, she was still pretty mobile. But she was just really playful and friendly and very funny. So I just wanted to say that. Her husband, Tony Patchell, also I knew very well. He was worked in the bakery with me and was later a private detective and in the Tenderloin. And anyway, that's all. Just that she was a very playful, very funny person.
Thank you. Yeah, and Tony also is a Zen teacher, and he worked with people on the street in San Francisco as well. And yeah, a lot to be said about that. One other thing is that Darlene, at the end of her life, after all of this, was the recipient of ovarian cancer, which eventually led to her early death. So this is someone who had a lot to practice with existentially and still help people. Yeah. Oh.
I don't know if I'm holding this right. Thank you for your talk. And I'm wondering, you know, this idea of non-preference, and I've been thinking then in the, you know, as throughout the talk about like, justice, like the idea of justice, right? Or like politics, or you know that is like the effort to kind of change things, right? Like, or repair things or whatever, like, you know, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah And so how do you know to square that kind of activity with non-preference, right? Like, and this is kind of a question for me over and over again of like acceptance, being, you know, present, etc., but then also having or recognizing a really strong like desire to change stuff, you know, and to see the world in a different kind of, you know, better, I guess, you know, with knowing that that's kind of like a loaded term. But yeah, like how to square non-preference with activity, you know, that's like specifically towards change, you know, just talking about it, like, to me, then, like, the word humility comes into it, right? Like, but I'm wondering if you could, like, just kind of address that for a moment.
Well, I wish Darlene were here, so I'm not speaking for her, and I think you're, this is the great danger of this practice of non-preference, which can seem like squelching out things that, you know, anything that we think is preference. So then we want to prefer non-preference. But I think our relationship to everything has a subtle shift. And I think Karen maybe put something in the shared folder that says a small shift can make a big difference. And so there's a shift in attitude which comes from like you can work for justice, but be okay with the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And also not be so sure you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as Lou said, we'll never know. And so really being okay with that, it's a very subtle, and it's something I think every Zen student is sort of struggles with, right? Like, how do we stand up in the middle of life and meet what's in front of us? So Darlene's a great example of being stricken by pain and real difficulty and, you know, in some ways kind of having to deal with it, you know? So we can't avoid what's happening in our culture or whatever we might seem to want. But there's a willingness to also be open. Like you said, humility is a great word. But also, it's sort of like if your favorite candidate doesn't win the election. You know, you have some reaction to that. But it's like, okay, I'm going to face this, as opposed to I'm going to turn away from this because it's not convenient for me, or it's not what I expected or wanted. So let me know how that goes. Because I know and share your wish for happiness for all beings, which I think you mean justice. Eve, maybe then,
Yeah, I mean, I've been struggling with those same things. Yeah, what helped was a conversation I had with a student the other day. I would say, well, you know, I realized my expectations were for progress and that the struggle for democracy meant that things were going to consistently get better. And finding that wasn't the case was hard. Yeah, you know, she's saying, yeah, well, I mean, because I said I was upset because I thought we had a functioning democracy. And she said, well, it didn't function for everybody. And she was saying that her hero was Ida B. Wells, and I was reading a little bit about Ida B. Wells' struggles. And she said, look at what happened at Reconstruction. You know, there was this big, there was improvement and then a big step back. And you know, being accepting that, you know, that happens, but you still, that doesn't mean that you let go of your wish for all beings to be content and free of suffering. But it's just that, yeah, that idea of the sort of, you know, march of that, the long arc always bends towards justice, being okay with letting go of that and seeing that there's depth. And she said, look, if you have a big backlash, it's because there was big progress. And so that's something to think about, you know, why we get the backlash. And, I mean, the other thing that helps me is Leonard Cohen's anthem, the holy dove will be caught again and bought and sold. And caught again, the dove is never free. But ring the bells, it still could ring. There is a crack in everything.
Oh.
But that's how the light gets in.
Thank you. Thank you. And so, Mia's on.
It's her time?
Yeah.
Do I have to press the button?
No.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for the talk. I've not started reading Darlene Cohen yet. I really look forward to it. At some point in your talk, you mentioned this idea of just being, you know, of being yourself. And I was thinking about this, you know, we chant, all my ancient twisted karma, I now fully avow. And it struck me, listening to your talk, that actually in this chant, I mean, that's kind of what that is about, largely, is being willing to be who we are, fully. With, you know, all the dance of acceptance and rejection, and, you know, all the eight worldly things and everything. And I was also remembering, you know, one of the things that really kind of hooked me on the path of Dharma a long time ago now. And it was something that Chogyam Trungpa said in different ways in a number of times that I've heard. And he connected You know, he would say things like, you know, the sort of first moment, the first aspect or instance of dana, of generosity, is being willing to appear fully who you are. And that's not only, you know, it's fundamentally an act of generosity to oneself in a sense, because it is that acceptance without necessarily acquiescence to ancient twisted karma. I mean, there's this, this dance of, you know, what can I do? What can I do to make things better? But it's there, but it's not only about an act of generosity to oneself. It's an act of generosity to everybody that you interact with, because because it's letting go, you know, and we think all these things, these eight worldly things, this is all, you know, it's all about this sort of engineering of, or this attempt to engineer a self that we prefer, right? And yes, I guess I've reached a dead end there, but it's, you know, just this idea of really, you know, accepting who you are, accepting your karma, accepting your situation, and moving from there. It's such a more promising avenue, such a more promising way than to try to be sort of somehow fixed and think that that's going to radiate out and take care of the world. It's a more subtle process. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I thank you for your talk, and I really look forward to it.
Thank you, Darlene. Yeah, thank you. One of the things that we don't do yet, but I hope we do, is often in morning service at San Francisco Zen Center, you chant the refuge right after you chant the confession and repentance. So after you fully avow your karma, you take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And I think that is really ultimately what Darlene is talking about, like a real refuge in reality, a refuge that doesn't entail this extra suffering from the engineered self, you might say. So thank you for bringing that up. So whenever we chant the repentance verse, I often think about that I'm chanting the refuges as well. Maybe this is enough for today. Thank you all very much for hanging in there with this conversation. And I think we'll do announcements after the four vows, which we'll chant three times. And anyone who has those small cards, I believe they're on the small cards. And I think everyone else online probably even knows this pretty well. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.
Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. The Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. We